Hello, everyone. Welcome to JTalk Extra Time. My name is Stuart Smith, and the next voice you're going to hear is John Steele. John, how's it going, man?
Very good, thanks, Stu. Yes, we are tantalisingly close to some actual J League football, I think, so I'm pumped.
Is there football this weekend? I hadn't seen it. What's going on?
Oh yeah. Apparently, it's everything's fine now, so we can enjoy the you know regular schedule. Yeah, you'll find out. We'll get into it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good because I didn't have anything else to talk about. So I suppose if we've got football on the slate, we should probably talk about it. So I'm looking at the J League website now, and they've got a handy little countdown clock which says 2 days, 6 hours, 42 minutes, and 20 seconds to the start of J2. Wow, that is soon. We're gonna kind of go through a few of the games in J2 and J3, John. Just straight off the bat, kind of, what's one of the games that you were particularly looking forward to this weekend?
Yeah, I think listeners, regular listeners who know me will not be surprised if I say that the majority of the J2 games, the round two games, are on Saturday. And the game that I'm hoping to catch, family commitments permitting, is the game between Tokyo Verdy and Machida Zelvia, the 6 p.m. game. It might sound like a strange choice because, to be honest, I'm not convinced that either of these two is going to have a stellar campaign. I think mid table is probably where they will net out in the end. But I think just the sort of excitement of seeing live J League again, and these are two teams that I'm close to geographically, and I watch pretty regularly in the past. So yeah, I think it's the Verdy versus Machida game, the Tokyo Classic, is the one I've got my eye on.
The Tokyo Classic. I think a good question to start off with, John, even though I've just already asked you a question, we'll start. This is the real start. Both of these teams, you said you don't think they're going to have like a spectacular season, but do you think that with the fact that there's no relegation this year, do you think that will kind of free up teams to kind of go for it a little bit more? Do you think or do you think teams will take it slowly and kind of bed in kind of younger players and hopefully build for like next season or the season after? What kind of effect do you think the no relegation might have on teams?
It's a good question. It's a deep one. I think what we've seen, because obviously football has come back in other territories, mainland Europe, for example, and the K League started up again recently. I think what we've seen in those leagues, and it might not be the best, it's not always a good idea to look to other leagues and see a pattern that will happen in the J League, but teams seem to be pretty much carrying on as usual in those other leagues, so that the good teams, the teams that were good before the hiatus, are still good. The teams that were bad are still bad. So I don't think in terms of, performance-wise, the long break will have much difference. But about no relegation, yeah, maybe. Maybe it will mean that teams, are a bit more kind of footloose and fancy-free when it comes to attacking. I think my concern would be that might be sort of, there's a sort of heart and head conflict where I think teams might want to play with a bit more freedom, or they might be a bit more relaxed about committing players forward, for example. I'm just not convinced for a lot of teams the ability is there that will mean that makes a noticeable difference. So what I'm trying to say is that the manager might say go out and enjoy yourselves, but that might not be evident to us watching. Because a lot depends on the kind of ability of the players that are put out there. So I think what we might see, at least initially, is, we've talked in the green room before recording, it's getting hot here. We're kind of, Tokyo anyway, Kanto is in the kind of mid rainy season at the moment, but there have been some very humid days. I think we will see, I think initially, or probably the opposite, I think you're going to get some languid, kind of slow games with a lot of mistakes. And players just kind of checking out physically, probably with 15 or 20 minutes to go. And then we'll see how that pans out. I think players will mentally be relaxed about the no relegation thing.
Yeah.
The Verdi match of the game specifically, I don't think either of these two would have been. I suppose teams generally don't worry about relegation too much after one match day. But I think for those two teams in particular, if it does lead to a more attacking style, it'll definitely take some time to actually see that. I think we're definitely going to be a slow start, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's an interesting thing, because like some of the questions that that came up in this interlude between the first game and the second game. I got one from Daniel Hartman. I got one from Gogo Omia Ardija, who I can actually pronounce now. I think a lot of people are wondering kind of what the effect of like the strength of squad will have on this kind of league system, which will absolutely slam squads in August and September with almost kind of constant weekend midweek rounds. And I think that one of the questions that I've often probably just shows you my mindset, something that I've often thought about is that, is it better to have a big squad, or is it better to have a streamlined squad where everybody knows what they're doing? And so I think, because in a minute I'm going to come on to Jeff United versus Almia, and I think Almia are a team that they don't have a particularly big squad, but I think that Takagi has a very certain and very definite way of playing. And I think that having a coach and a team and a squad that is very, very familiar with what the manager wants to do means that you can chop and change to a certain extent without kind of necessarily negating the on-field product. Whereas I think that Jeff United have a big squad. I think they have a new manager. And whereas this time kind of will have been good for Yoon Jung-hwan to kind of bed in his ideas and get a bit more training in, I think that it will take time. Like you were just saying with Verdi and Machida, I think it'll take time for Yoon to actually see his results and progress on the field. And that's why I think that I'm not necessarily of the opinion that having a big squad will actually be so much of an advantage. I think having a squad that knows what it's going to do and the players fit into what the manager wants to do, even if it is a bit smaller, I think that that's probably a better way to approach this season. I don't know what you think about that, but that's the way I'm looking at things now.
Mm. I think you're making good points, and a phrase that's often used when it comes to, you know, the fixture congestion that we're inevitably going to have is like strength in depth.
Mm.
And I think some people read that as shorthand for having a big squad, but I actually agree with you. I think there's no point having, you know, a 40-man squad with, you know, five goalkeepers.
Mm.
If some of these guys are never going to be used because they're not good enough, or they're you know, the manager doesn't really know if they're good enough or not. I think the key thing, and this is where it will be interesting, is as we've discussed a few times, you know, J2, J3, that level coaching can make a big difference.
Yes.
And it's a lot to do with giving the players instructions that they're comfortable with, that they can actually carry out. So I mean, the amount of times you see a team playing with like three defenders, three centre backs, and it's obvious that none of them are comfortable doing it.
Mm.
You know, for example, that, you know, the manager's asking them to do things that they're not that comfortable doing. I think where the Jeff versus Omia game will be interesting, and I agree, I think Omia are much further along than Jeff in terms of you know, sort of squad cohesion, if you like. But I think that they're two excellent coaches, aren't they?
They are.
You and Takagi. So it's kind of a real battle of the minds, if you like, in that game. That will make it interesting. But yeah, I think I used to go and watch YSCC back in the JFL days, and they used to have five substitutions that they could use, and the last 20 minutes of games would often be like I wouldn't say it was like park football, but it was pretty ragged. You'd lost track of who was on and who was off. And players were often just breathing out of their arse for one with 20 minutes to go. So I think what is interesting about this kind of compressed schedule, you know, playing 41 rounds over the space of about, what are we at, 5.5 months? I think managers are going to have to be prepared to deal with more injuries than usual. I think more fatigue than usual. So you are going to see some odd, I think, team selections further down the line. But I'm in conclusion, I agree with what you said. I think strength in depth doesn't necessarily mean 40 players. If you're not confident using 20 of them, strength in depth could be a 22-man squad where everybody knows their job and the manager trusts all the players and can put them in as necessary. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see who comes out on top in that game as well.
Yeah, so like you said, like Yun Junhwan and Takuya Takagi are very kind of highly respected coaches in Japan. Obviously, Takagi got Viva and Nagasaki promoted to J1, and he also got he led Omiya to a third place finish last year. Yun Junhwan has kind of won trophies at Seretse Osaka. He got Sagan Tosu to the top of the league. These two coaches are very kind of they're big name coaches for J2, and I think you know, it's going to be a really interesting game, and I think one of the things that is kind of sad about this is that this would have been a spectacular game on TV if fans are in the stadium. Obviously Chiba decked out in yellow, Omi would bring almost a full away following decked in orange. I think it would have been a great visual spectacle. It's just unfortunate with how this is all played out that it's going to be played behind closed doors. But I think in accordance with you, I think that Omi are kind of, they are further along in their development. They have players that know and have acted out Takagi's instructions on the field before. I think last year, Ippei Shinozuka was arguably the best player in the league in the second half of the year. His dynamism on the left hand side and like on in the wing back role was just a sight to behold. He was like a force of nature for Omiya last year, and I think that whoever is going to be lined up against him is going to be in for a difficult day. And we said before that kind of we should probably take these games as a kind of single entity restart, not kind of link it to the previous games. Like Chiba won their first game against Ryukyu, Omiya won their first game away at Mito. Like both these teams were probably looking at like being around the upper reaches of the league, and so this is a bit of a banger to start off with, I think. But I think the Jeff Ormier game is the biggest game on the Saturday slate, but another game that you're keeping an eye on is the undisputed King of the Sunday games, right?
Yeah, I think, again, this kind of links nicely from what you were saying about what would be a great, great spectacle if it weren't being held behind closed doors. The Sunday game that I think is probably the highlight of the J2 round, you know, across all 11 games, is the game on Sunday between Kyoto and Iwata at the Sanga Stadium. What's it called? Kyocera?
It's Sanga Stadium by Kyocera.
There we go. Okay, so obviously this has already had... Now, they held the one sort of high-profile friendly match, didn't they, against Seretse Osaka back in February. So this was going to be the first kind of competitive... Well, it is going to be the first competitive game at the new ground. It's a shame, such a shame it's going to be behind closed doors, because I'm pretty sure it would have been a sellout for home and away fans otherwise. Kyoto, I think, are going to be good this year. With that hasn't... I haven't really changed my mind on that since the sort of round one 4 months ago. Iwato is a team where they've... This might just be because they seem to be always on DAZN playing the training games. Like pretty much every training game over the hiatus seemed to feature Iwata for some reason. But yeah, I also think they're going to be strong And I think they weren't in my top six J-Pred with, you know, with Gifu Richie beforehand, but I think they probably will be now. So I think this is a real early doors heavyweight clash, I think. Yeah, which I don't think we can say that about Verdi, Machida and Jeff Ormier, because I don't think Jeff and certainly not in the heavyweight category, but I think Kyoto and Iwata are, and this could be a really good game, I think.
So this game is being shown by the J League free of charge internationally, right?
That's right. Yeah, I think if you can also get Verdi Machida on the Saturday.
Oh, that's right. Of course you can.
Yeah, and Kyoto Iwata. So 6 p.m. Japan time kickoffs on Saturday and Sunday. They're both going to be streamed live on YouTube, apparently, not inside Japan for you know, broadcasting you know, marketing reasons, but internationally you'll be able to watch these two games for free on the J League's international YouTube channel, which is an interesting move and a great idea. You almost wonder if they're copying the K League, if they've worked out the K League exists over there. So yeah, we'll see how they go. I'd love to see. I don't think we'll ever get numbers, you know, on how many people tune in. But I think the K League did release its numbers for some of their YouTube games. So they're very happy with them. So if it's popular, if it's successful, we might get to hear how many people watch the games. And I suppose, you know, some enterprising people in Japan with a VPN might be able to tune in as well. I don't know.
Don't say that kind of thing.
It's okay. It's not illegal. It's you know.
It's fine. It's fine.
It's not pyramid selling.
It's just a triangle. That's all. I wonder if there'll be commentary. By the way, J League English J whatever your Twitter handle is. If you're listening, I'm available for commentary work. Just saying. I'm all good for that. Don't worry. I won't drop an F-bomb, probably.
He can't promise this.
No, yeah. There'll be an asterisk and some small print at the bottom of that. I think this one, again, just piggybacking on what you said, it is a big game. I think that... So obviously Kyoto lost their opening game. I think they lost in Yamaguchi. And Jubilo, I think Jubilo won pretty easily, right? I think
they cruised past their opponent
Yamagata
2-0.
That's right. Yeah,
and Ogawa scored 2.
That's right. And so this is going to be, it's going to be a good test for both teams, actually, because I think like Kyoto, if they lose this game, it's too early for warning signs, but like they've got a new manager. Like the new manager has probably needed time to bed in his ideas, bed in a squad of individuals. Like you wonder how well they're meshing as a group. I suppose we're going to find out on Sunday evening, I would say. But there's no doubt that they've got some star players. They've got Peter Utaka. They've got Yori Boyce. They've got Tadanari Lee. Yoshihiro Shoji is still in the midfield. I think that they've got some really good players, but I think Moriwaki's there as well, right? But they're going to have some serious issues with Koki Ogawa, I think. Ogawa is... he's primed for an explosion this year. I think he's going to be up and around the top goal scorers charts this year. So I think this is going to be a really good advert for J2, to be quite frank. So if all of our international listeners tune into these games, I think Verdi Machida will be a really interesting game, but I think it lacks the star power of the Jubilo Kyoto game, I think. And so I think this will be an ideal game to check out on Sunday. And with apologies, I did say that Kyoto versus Jubilo was king of the Sunday games. That's in no way kind of demeaning FC Ryukyu versus Avispa Fukuoka, because I think this will be... I think that'll be an interesting game as well. Obviously, Fukuoka won their first game at Kitakyushu. I think we both have kind of high hopes or high expectations of Fukuoka this year, and it'll be important for Ryukyu to get on the board at home as well, I think. And so I think that'll be a decent game on Sunday. My second game that I was kind of really interested in is Kanazawa and Matsumoto. And I think, I mean, there's a load of good games. There's no getting away from that. Like, Corfu are taking on Niigata. That'll be good. There's a derby, Gunma versus Mito. That'll be good. Okayama versus Yamaguchi. Nagasaki against Kitakyushu. They're all good. I think Kanazawa and Matsumoto, I think they're two stylistically similar teams. And I think this will be kind of a good kind of bellwether for the thing we were talking about earlier, is that Kanazawa are a team that know exactly what they're doing. Like, all the players know exactly where they're supposed to be, exactly what they're supposed to do, and how they're supposed to play. And Kanazawa, I think for early on in the season, I think they'll be a difficult matchup. I think they pushed Okayama quite closely in their opening game. They were unfortunate to lose 1-0 in Okayama. But I think that they'll be set up well, and I think they'll be a difficult kind of matchup for Matsumoto. I know Matsumoto won their first game away at Ehime, I think it was. And yeah, they actually had to come from behind in that game as well. And so, two teams that kind of like to play 4-4-2. I think Matsumoto have probably the better, shall we say, star power. If that's, they've got Serginio, Sugimoto Taro, they've got Toyofumi Sakano. They've got some really good players, but I think this will be an interesting game, and I think you'll see two very similar teams playing against each other. I think it will be tight, and it wouldn't surprise me if Kanazawa took the win from this one, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I think just to come in on that, I think that there's a really interesting kind of, I would call this is not a real expression, but it's kind of like a sort of elevator match, in the sense that for me, I sense, you're right about Matsumoto having the star power, but they're fading stars a little, I think. And I think Matsumoto, there's just a chance, and I'm not kind of throwing it out there as a definite, but I think there's a chance that Matsumoto are kind of definitely in transition and maybe on the way down at the moment. Whereas Kanazawa looking quite upwardly mobile, I think. And I agree with you that Kanazawa could win this game, but I even think over the course of the season, this might be the year where Kanazawa could actually finish higher than Matsumoto in the league.
Oh, big words.
Yeah. Well,
dropping
bombs. I don't think it's ever happened before, you know. If there was a microphone, I'd drop it, but I'm on my iPhone, so if I do that, it'll end the podcast prematurely. But yeah, I just think for me, there's, looking at Matsumoto now, there's a little whiff of Nagano Parcero from a few years ago, of like stagnation doesn't sound right. That's just a bit harsh, but I'm not sure that squad is as scary or as fearsome as it has been in previous years.
I think that. Well, I think one of the things that strikes me about Matsumoto is that they've lost a lot of their kind of spiritual leaders. If you like, obviously Sorimachi is gone. Masaki Iida has also gone. Paulinho is also not there anymore. Hiroyuki Takasaki, even though he was on the downslope, he's not there anymore. And I think it's a club that, I mean, Matsumoto is a club that people identify through their fans, I think, more than their players. But at least kind of last year and previous years, they had a nucleus of players that when you saw them on the team sheet, you knew exactly kind of how they were going to play. They're feisty, they're hard, they're not gonna kind of lie down for you, and they're gonna give a bit back if you go into them. This kind of team that they've got now is a little bit unknown. There's a little bit of kind of, I'm not sure kind of what they're how they're gonna set up and play. Obviously they've still got kind of they've still got stalwarts like They've got Murayama, the goalkeeper. I think they've got Hashiyuchi and Tanaka Hayama in defence. But I think, I don't think I'd go as far as to say that they'll finish below Kanazawa. But I think that Kanazawa they're a perfect example of what I was speaking about earlier. They're a team that knows what they're going to do. The manager has been there for long enough that he knows the players, he knows what kind of players he wants to bring into the team, and they have no problem adapting to what he says, to what is a very basic form of football. Like, they are, they set up and they go out and they execute what he wants them to do, which is, I mean, it's not, like I said, it's not reinventing the wheel. It's mainly a 4-4-2, two ball playing midfielders and some hard tackling defenders. It's not rocket science, but I think they'll prove a difficult matchup for Matsumoto on Saturday, right? Yeah, Saturday night. I think that'll be good. John, any other like notes on J2 before we head to J3?
No, I think you mentioned all the games, at least in passing. So we'd love to preview them all, but we just picked out the games that we had the most to say about, really. So yeah, like you, I'm just trying to preempt sort of angry DMs or tweets from fans of clubs that we haven't considered. But over the next 5 months, don't worry, there'll be a chance, I think, to talk about every team in detail at some point.
At regular points as well, given the schedule. Okay, well, let's move on to J3 then, because obviously J3 is kicking off on Saturday as well. So they're kicking off this weekend. It's regional, as is J2. So you've got some kind of derby games this weekend. So you've got Iwate versus Akita. You've got Numazu versus Fujieda, which is the second Shizuoka derby, I would put it down as. Sagamihara taking on YSCC. Kumamoto Kagoshima, that's an interesting game to start off with. Toyama versus Nagano. Yeah, there's a lot of decent games upon the slate this weekend, John. First of all, obviously, I'm going to assume that you're taking an interest in Sagamihara and YSCC.
Oh, it's funnily enough, yeah, I didn't really make any notes about that one, because it's similar for me to the Verdy Machida game of the two teams that I like to watch and I know a little bit about. But I mean, as we know, YSCC, and as we learned a lot from the interview that Gabriele Anello did with Yuki Staff, the manager, recently online, they play very attractive football. It's very exciting to watch. They might be one team that didn't really, caution wasn't in their vocabulary when relegation was a thing, I suppose. So, it might not make much difference to them. Yeah, but I don't really see, at some point, Sagamihara will be in J2, I think. That's my prediction. Not this year. Not probably for the next few years. But they're definitely building in that direction. But no, I don't really think. I think this year is too early to expect anything from Sagamihara, and for YSCC, you can just expect a lot of goals, but not really any potential to go much higher than. I mean, finishing in the middle of the table would be trebles all round, high fives, I think. And that's not intended to be derogatory. It's just based on their performance in the league, since J3 started. So I think that will be an exciting game to watch, probably, but not of the highest quality, perhaps, if that's fair.
No, I think that's fair.
Yeah, I'm more interested in the Gifu game.
Well, there you go.
Against the Imabari. So I'll just tee you up for that one, and then just lean back in my seat, I think.
Gifu are hosting Imabari's first ever J League game. It's a Saturday night game. Kicks off at 6 o'clock. I think Gifu have been kind of in the thick of warm up games. I think they've lost most of their warm up games as well. But they've played Jubilo. I think they've played Nagoya twice. I think they played Kanazawa as well. So it's not. I don't think they're going to be short of Well, they will be short of match fitness, but not match practice, if that makes sense. I think the buzz around Gifu right now is that people are are expecting quite a lot this year. Last year was so bad, but from what I've seen so far, the squad is better than last year, which is kind of remarkable that now that we're in J3, the squad is better than it was when we were in J2. But the addition of Takasaki, who scored a really good goal against Nagoya in one of the warm-up games, Wataru Hashimoto from Kobe is a great signing for J3. And I think one thing that Gifu can't be overlooked, or the Gifu supporters can't overlook, is the return of Yuta Togashi. He came in from Ryukyu last year. He scored 16 when Ryukyu were promoted, or Ryukyu were champions of J3. But he ruptured his knee ligament early on last year, and it's taken him quite a while to get back in. He showed some brilliant touches in the Nagoya warm-up game from last weekend. And so I think that from having a pretty toothless forward line last year, Gifu have actually got a lot more kind of striking options going forward. And I think the defense will take a step forward. It's still not great, but it doesn't have to be, because they're not playing against Cristiano or Iba or whoever this year. They're playing against kind of Cerezo's under 23s or Nagano's kind of shot shy strike force. And so
I think you've just done the Imabari team talk.
I think I have, yeah. And maybe
it's going up on the dressing room wall.
Ah, but I haven't said anything about Imabari. And I think that's because I don't really know that much about them. I've studied them a little bit for the J3 preview, which is still available for Patreons. I'll just throw that in. I'll throw it in at the end as well. But yeah, I don't really know much about them. I know they're one of the teams with a Spanish manager as well. Obviously, it's Takeshi Okada who gets
attention.
Yes. The headlines, but it's actually, yeah, there's actually a Spanish manager at the helm, and so it's a little bit difficult to know kind of what's going on and what they're going to be like. But it's their first ever J-League game, and so I think that they'll be well up for it. But I think Gifu probably should have enough for them, but J3 is an inherently unpredictable league, and so I'm not 100% sure, but I think I would be disappointed if Gifu didn't take away the 3 points.
Debutants are always interesting in terms of being an unknown quantity, so I always keep an eye out for any new team that enters the J-League and to see how they go on, whether it's a new promotion or a team coming and, you know, becoming fully professional, you know, in J3 for the first time. I think Imabari, everything about the club is slick, right? Website is slick, kits are slick, Spanish manager, you know, they're checking all the boxes.
They are.
It's like if you were setting up like a fake football team to troll people on Twitter, it would look something like Imabari's like profile, I think. But what I'm curious is whether, you know, how that measures up on the pitch. It's completely different once you actually start playing games, isn't it? So I think it looks like a very professional, very well-run club, and it's great to see them in the league. I'm really curious to see how they get on. I think Gifu away is probably one of the hardest games. Let's hope anyway, Stuart. Fingers crossed. That's one of the hardest games of the season for teams. So I'm not sure whether they'll be very. They'll try to keep things very tight. You know, they'll obviously be happy if they can get a point, I would think, in the first game. But yeah, I'm just really curious to see how they go, not only on the weekend, but over the whole season. Like how do they adapt to the kind of step up in level? And will that kind of very professional atmosphere that there is around the club, will that help them? You know, will the players feel like they belong there already? Or could that be something that actually holds them back if the players start to feel like they are... they're not at that level. They're letting down the image of the club a little bit, for example, if they're not winning enough games. So yeah, I'm just really curious. That's going to be really interesting as the season unfolds.
I think that Imabari are one of the most important stories of this upcoming kind of entire J League season, J1, J2, and J3, because I think it's important to see new clubs come into the league, and I think it's important to see them kind of establish themselves and stabilize, because there'll be a lot of teams that are outside the J League possibly looking in. We've talked a little bit about Iwaki FC in Fukushima. There's Musashino in Tokyo. You know, there's Matsue out in Western Japan. I think the teams that are looking at Imabari and thinking, right, we need to kind of look how they do, assess what they've done and how they've done it, and will it or has it been successful? And I think that there'll be a lot of eyes on Imabari, and we need to kind of celebrate the fact that there's a new team, and we want them to do well. But you know, that's the $1 million question, right? Like, our teams that are coming up from the JFL, remember, Imabari didn't even win the JFL last year. Like, we need to make sure that they're up to standard, right?
Yes, that's what we want. I agree. It's not enough just to be ushering in a new team every year. They have to be seen to cope and even thrive, I think, in the J League. So yeah, I agree with you. I think it's going to be interesting, but yeah, it's almost like not to pile pressure on Imabari, but I think there'll be a lot of very, very interested observers, as you say, outside the J League structure, the J League, you know, pyramid, if you like, who'd be curious to see how they get on. And they would probably like to look at their financials as well come December.
Okay, so I think we've gone over the first weekend of actual J League games that are coming up this Saturday and Sunday. Wherever you are in the world, I hope you take advantage of the J League's generous offer to watch either or both of Tokyo Verdy Machida and Kyoto and Jubilo Iwata. Yeah, I'd also just like to thank the Patreons. There's plenty of Patreon content this week and coming up. If you haven't already had a chance to listen to the exclusive Patreon talk that I did with the K-League United's head honcho Ryan Walters and Ben with Scott Whitelock as well, as to kind of what to expect. Obviously, Korea and the K-League has already started, and we talked about what to expect from empty stadiums and those kind of things. It's a really, really interesting listen, and it's exclusive for Patreons of the podcast, of the J-Talk podcast. Also, my J2 and J3 previews are still behind the paywall at the on the Patreon site, so if you want to kind of get a bit more knowledge about the J2 sides and the J3 sides that are starting their seasons this weekend, that'll be a good place to start. And there's also some more Patreon content coming next week and the week after, so it's something to look forward to. In the meantime, I'd like to thank John Steele. John, thanks for joining me again, and yeah, here's to a good season.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Hope everybody enjoys the matches at the weekend. And yeah, we'll be back next week to kind of pick through the wreckage, I guess.
Wreckage being a pretty apt word, I would say, for this starting weekend. Yeah, so big thanks to everyone who listens. Like I said before, big thanks to the patrons. But a big thank you to everyone who takes the time to listen and takes the time to give feedback. It's all really appreciated. And yeah, we look forward to sharing the J2 and J3 seasons with you. So wherever you are, enjoy the football this weekend. You all deserve it. And we'll speak to you next week. Goodbye for now.